Welcome to the Concordia Publishing House podcast, where we consider everything in the light of Jesus Christ, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I'm your host, Elizabeth Pittman.
Welcome, everyone. We are so glad that you've joined us today for our conversation with the esteemed Reverend Dr. Brian Friedrich, president of Concordia University St. Paul. We're glad that he's joining us today. We're going to be talking about higher education, specifically Lutheran Christian higher education. And knowing Brian, I can guarantee that there will be a lot of substance and also a lot of laughter throughout this conversation. How are you?
Very well, Elizabeth. How are you? So steamed. I'm not steamed at all.
Esteemed.
This is Minnesota, but it's like spring. We had like an inch of rain yesterday. People think March in Minnesota, snow, no way. No, this is the banana belt.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
We even had thunder.
We had a big thunderstorm this morning. I'm glad it stopped. It went from about 6:30 to 7:30. And I was a little concerned because it was really loud and you would have been drowned out by the sound of the rain here on the roof. And it would have been really dark in here too, but now the sun is coming out. So it's not too bad.
Good. Well, that might have been God's plan, you know, to cancel things out.
I think so, to have the sunlight streaming in for our conversation.
There we go.
Well, I'm glad that you're, you know, for our listeners, I've been after Brian to come on the podcast for months now. And every time I ask, he deflected. You know, you should go talk to Mark Koshman or go talk to Reed Lessing, or I'll give you 18 other people to go talk to before you get to me. But I didn't give up and now we have him. So this is going to be fun. See, aren't you lucky?
Yes. it's like I told you, you know, your dad says a day without Elizabeth is like a day without sunshine. So look, I mean, I have sun. I mean, this is so great.
I wouldn't trust everything that comes out of his mouth. So
I do. He was one of my professors.
Really?
So don't burst my bubble.
For homiletics or for something else?
New Testament.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he survived.
And I survived barely.
Now, are you an opa too?
I am.
Okay, so the two of you are both opas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you're in good company.
Yeah, but we have only two grandchildren.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they've got the Cinco de Mayo, so we just kind of work with that, the five boys. So it's all good. So you are now in your first year at Concordia University St. Paul. How's that going?
You know, pretty well. But Elizabeth, this is actually my second year, but that's not the way I count my time. So a long time ago, one of the academic deans at Concordia, Nebraska, where I used to serve, counted his time by semesters. I figured, well, if he could count his time by semesters, I could count my time by board meetings.
That's a very good way to count.
I mean, it's much more impressive to say, five board meetings rather than in my second year.
I guess it just felt to me like you just got there, but it has been five board meetings.
Come on.
And I think my dad has measured tenure by board meetings too.
Yeah,
and that's a great marker because those often come with good things, but also the anticipation and the preparation to get ready for those meetings takes quite a bit of work.
Yeah. So at Nebraska, I was president for 62 board meetings.
And
2 weeks after I became president, I had my first board meeting there. And I was walking across campus after that board meeting. And a faculty member says to me, well, how did it go? I said, no, I don't know. I think, okay, I think I have a job for another 90 days. And without skipping a beat, the faculty member said, you mean they can't fire you in between board meetings? I said, oh, yes, they can. I have the least secure job of anyone at the university. So,
oh my goodness! Well, you've done a great job, and I know the folks over at Nebraska were sad to see you go. But Concordia St. Paul has gotten a gift. Now, how did you come to be involved in higher education? What was the path that you took to end up where you are?
So maybe one disclaimer: I'm a third generation alum of Concordia St. Paul. So if I would look not in your eyes, but on my wall, picture my grandfather who started at CSP in 19, 1911. So he attended CSP, my dad, my three uncles, my brother, I, and a cousin. So my father, Henry, calls this our family alma mater. So there's been a part of our family that's always been invested in Christian higher education in the Concordias. So that may be kind of the seed of it if we go back far enough. But a longer story, a bit shorter, I graduated from CSP in 1979. And I had met this incredibly beautiful co-ed who was going to graduate a year later. And she wants to go into graduate school at the University of Minnesota. So, plan. I'll stay if I can, if I can find a job. So I was an admission counselor for Concordia St. Paul, 1979 to 80, waiting for Lori to graduate. And then I was going to wait until she finished grad school at the University of Minnesota. But through a variety of reasons, that didn't happen. We went to the seminary in St. Louis. And then I was assigned to a parish and to teach at a Lutheran school in Maspeth, New York City. Then served a parish in northern Wisconsin. But there'd always been kind of this burning in my heart to be in higher education. So one day in the mail, while I was serving at Peace Lutheran Church in Park Falls, Wisconsin, received a copy of the Reporter, and Concordia, Nebraska was looking for a director of church relations. And I thought, that sounds kind of interesting. So I applied, went through the process, and at the end of the process, President Orville Waltz said, well, Brian, here's the deal. We're not going to hire you for that job. We're not going to hire you. And I said, I've been rejected before. That's no big deal. That's no big deal. We're going to hire someone older, wiser, better. I mean, all those things, right? He said, but we're about to start a campaign to celebrate Concordia, Nebraska's centennial, which was in 1994. So this is 1991. And he said, I think you could lead that campaign. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. I don't know anything about fundraising. And well, anyway, long story short, that's how I got in. And I served with Orb for 13 of the 14 years that he was president. And then in 2004, Concordia, Nebraska called me to be its 10th president. And in 2020, as you said, I started at Concordia St. Paul as president. So that's the story.
That's a great story. It's a great legacy that your family has at Concordia St. Paul.
Yeah, it is.
It's neat to see those family lines when they run that deep and just the impact that it can have on future generations. So it looks like your grandkids probably have, you know,
plans.
My kids got admissions packets to the seminary before I even got home from the hospital having delivered them. So I would imagine your grandkids may have their rooms reserved on the campus.
Well, you know, they're always decked out in green and gold. So I figured they're either Packer fans or they're headed to Concordia Seminary.
Well, you know, that's not a bad thing.
No.
Seminary, definitely the seminary, not Packer fans in my house.
Oh, boo, boo.
No. I married a Texan. And so when we got married, we decided that we had to compromise. So for football, the allegiance goes to the Dallas Cowboys. For baseball, we come out with the winner in the St. Louis Cardinals.
Okay. Well, we can still be friends then.
Yes, absolutely. Barely. So that way we had to compromise on the sports front when we got married. So,
well, at least you chose one of God's teams.
Yes, absolutely. And so we are excited to see what happens when the season starts. We are ready.
We're absolutely ready.
It'll be good. So, you know, it's interesting where, you know, our Concordias, and if I'm correct, are you the longest serving Concordia University president in terms of years?
Patrick Ferry is.
Okay. All right. So he's transitioning.
I think Pat's 24 years, something like that.
So I know he's transitioning. So you're going to step up into that role of being, I guess, the dean of the CU presidents, correct?
Something like that. Right. Something like that.
No pressure there.
Yeah.
But I know our Concordias have had a long history, and they've changed a lot over the years. They've grown and they've developed, and there's so many good things happening at our Concordias. And I'm not sure that everyone is aware of that, because I think, you know, human beings have an ability to create an impression of an institution, you know, years ago, and it never changes despite the fact that the institution is changing. What do you think are some of the, maybe they're long held misconceptions about our Concordia universities?
Yeah, that is a great question, Elizabeth. So I like to call them the myths. And I think one of the myths, and more it's becoming less a myth, but it's still a myth, that the Concordias are for church work students only students going into full-time church work. And part of that challenge, I think, is because they're all named Concordia, right? Even our seminaries are named Concordia. And so people, you know, if they're worshiping every week, that, well, my pastor graduated from Concordia, you're serving at a Concordia, and it's a natural correlation. But that's myth number one, is that they're for church work students only. Myth number two, that they're for Lutherans only. Only Lutherans would go to a Concordia. I think the third myth is how they're funded, that the church funds the institutions. I think the fourth myth is they're residential only. Only 18 to 22-year-olds attend these schools. And then I think there's also a myth around how should I best say it? Kind of the quality and capacity of the institutions. For example, I had, when I was in Nebraska, I had a person visit campus, and he walked around campus and said, "Wow, this is amazing. I thought maybe there would be one kind of old rickety building with a computer in the basement, and that would be all there is. But this is like a real university." I said, "That's right." That's right. But you know, the reality is there are many, many people in our church and beyond who love these schools. And I think as presidents of the institutions, all of us say the same thing. We are the church's school. So we're really here in so many ways to serve the church broadly, deeply, as well as that historic, traditionally preparation workers for the church. One of the things I think is interesting, if we read the histories of these institutions, and Concordia St. Paul would be a good example of that, is even in their inception, the founders of the institution thought about these in a broader context than just the narrow context of preparing workers for the church. So that was true at Concordia, Nebraska. It certainly was true here. There was essentially a petition or memorial to the church to say, let us equip lay people as well as church workers. But at that time, there was such an incredible need and demand for church workers because the church was just booming. It was moving westward, and we needed pastors. We needed teachers. And so the church really said, narrow your focus and do this one thing that the church most needs right now.
Well, I think as Lutherans, we have such a beautiful understanding of vocation and how that plays out. And our universities and our Lutheran schools, all the way down high school, elementary schools, in my experience, have done such a beautiful job of instilling in the students that no matter what your vocation becomes, no matter what career you choose, you know, as a Christian, you need to live out your faith, whether you're a pastor, teacher, doctor, you know, you name it. You're called to do this. And right. And I think what you're describing is just such a beautiful thing where no matter what the student is majoring in, they're going to leave understanding their faith and how that plays out in the world.
Well, CPH just did a wonderful thing. Dr. Jeff Leininger from Concordia Chicago, I love his new book. And I tease him that he is the one who put the S back in the word vocation, right? So
yes.
Sometimes we so narrow it, but he did just a fabulous job of saying vocations, plural. And Jeff is a Concordia St. Paul alum. His dad was a prof here for a long, long time. I'm now sainted, now in heaven. But that's so true. And one of the rich things that I think our LCMS Concordias do so well is that the doctrine of vocation flows from the doctrine of salvation. So we first start with who we are as broken, sinful human beings, share the good news that Jesus Christ is the one and only Savior of the world. And then from that, the Holy Spirit works in our hearts to sanctify us to live out our vocations, whether that's mom, whether it's dad, OPA, neighbor, community. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. So what an incredible laboratory for students to experience vocation firsthand, or vocations firsthand. And we can talk about that in so many different ways with students, right? So they're preparing for a career, but they're also preparing to be a neighbor, a friend. And so they have that experience living in a residence hall, maybe they're in a choir or on a team or something like that. So lots of opportunities to learn and practice an vocation.
It's a great thing. It's a fabulous book. And Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose by Jeff Leininger is an excellent book. And I know our different college campuses have been using it. I know some high schools have even brought it into their students. It's absolutely appropriate for juniors, seniors in high school, and all the way up to adults of any age, because it really does give such a fresh look and reminder of, oh yeah, the people that we meet, you know, in our daily life, we have a vocation to them. Right. And it's just, it's a very neat book. So I'm glad you like it.
I do. And maybe that's just if I can do a little shout out or thank you to, sure, to CPH. I mean, you guys are doing fabulous work. It's really good stuff and meeting relevant and real needs today. So thanks. Keep it up.
I appreciate that. And I was kind of smiling while you were talking about the myths of the Concordias. And we have, well, number one, only in the LCMS is the word Concordia ambiguous. We joke about that all the time here. Like, some people say Concordia, like, which one?
Yeah, which one?
let's narrow that down. Which one are we talking about? But we'll often talk about it here. When visitors come to CPH, without fail, if it's their first time taking a tour through the building, they always leave saying, I had no idea.
Yeah.
We had no idea. They either don't imagine that there's anything beyond the CPH logo on their hymnal or on their Bible, but they come into the building and they tour through and they're blown away.
Yeah.
And they'll see the technology and the teams and the people. They get to meet the people who are working on the products, and without fail, we had no idea. This is amazing. Yeah. So I understand where you're coming from with the myths. And you just want to say, if you haven't looked in the last decade, please take a fresh look.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, maybe we'll get to this later on. What can people do? But one of the things that we've encouraged for years is visiting the campuses. And mm-hmm. today that visiting is easier than ever. I mean, just check out the websites of the universities and the virtual tours on there. Fabulous. Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden you have a picture of what I believe God is calling the church to do and to be. And it's happening on our Concordia campuses. Pretty exciting.
It really is exciting. There's so much good stuff happening. So, you know, we have our Concordia universities, and as you said, they're not just for church work students. They're not just, the student's body is not just composed of Lutherans. How are you balancing teaching the Lutheran faith with everything that's happening in our culture and our society and preparing leaders for the future?
You are kind of a rock star question answer. That's like why I think I didn't want to be on. I knew you'd stump me at some point. You're so good. So I think here's where I want to start with that question is, well, why are we Lutheran? Why are we Lutheran? And one of our emeritus theology professors at CSP said it this way. We're Lutheran because Martin Luther points us to Christ, and Christ points us to the world. And as I think about that, I'm thinking, that's right on. It needs to be a both and. It needs to be a both and. What a rich experience to have students who are preparing for full-time ministry in the church, walking alongside, learning alongside students that may have a faith different than theirs, may have no faith at all, may really have no idea who God is. And that's an incredible experience. At the same time, I think, wow, to think that students who come from a non-Christian tradition, who may not have a faith or different Christian tradition, are coming to Concordia. They're actually paying tuition and they get to learn here. So all the Concordias require all of their students to take religion or theology courses. Every day, students have a chance to worship on campus, be in Bible study, be part of devotions with with a group or with a team or with a choir, to have Christian professors. I mean, I think it's amazing, and maybe people don't know this, but at the Concordias, all the theology courses are taught by Lutheran theologians. There's any number of private universities or faith-based universities where sometimes the theology courses aren't even taught by a Christian person. And you think, how does that happen? How does that happen? So I think just the rich interplay between faith and life that happens so naturally on our campus every day is pretty significant.
You know, as you're talking about leadership, and I'm going to throw a wrinkle in here, not a bad one. I had one of your peers, President Don Christian, on the podcast a while back, and we were talking about leadership, and I asked him this question, and I think it makes sense based on the question that you just answered. Tell me, in your mind, what does Lutheran leadership look like?
What does Lutheran leadership look like?
What does it mean to be a Lutheran Christian leader?
Yeah, I think, well let me give you a specific example. From our health sciences college, kind of the motto of that college is, we walk in the steps, the footsteps of the greatest healer that the world has ever known. So what does Lutheran leadership look like? It means no matter what our vocation is that we are working and serving and leading as the Savior served and leads us. So in many ways, it's all about discipleship. It's really, a Lutheran leader is really being a disciple, a follower of Jesus Christ.
I have an upcoming book I need to send you since you mentioned discipleship. So I'll send it your way. Stay tuned, listeners.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe just to round out the question, more than ever today, Elizabeth, our university campuses are really mission outposts. Because there are students coming here that we wish would go or be in a church, but they're not. They're not. And I don't know if they ever would set their foot in a church, but because they're here, we have an opportunity to share the gospel with them. A few weeks ago, Pat Ferry and I were talking, and we had the same experience, but on two different campuses. So this happened at his campus in Ann Arbor and on our campus here, where two young men were both baptized, and the community had an opportunity to celebrate God's grace at work in the sacrament of baptism. You think, wow, that's fantastic.
That's and exciting.
I think, yeah, if you had all the presidents assembled, each of them could tell a similar story about students who came to faith as they were at the Concordia.
And it is great because, I mean, we don't know how the Spirit is going to work, but you do have such an environment where it is amazing how you can have the gospel shared so freely throughout their daily experience that it leads to those situations. So that's
right.
Amazing.
Right. Yeah. People say, well, tell me more about that. And as I attended the baptism of the young man on our campus, I looked around at his students, his peers who had gathered, and I thought, I wonder what these young men and women are thinking. And it was really a powerful time. And the other thing here, how cool this is. So love technology. So he Zoomed his family in to watch the baptism.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
gotta be great.
That's a great story. You know, our culture is changing. The culture is, you know, it's more and more secularized, more and more anti-Christian. Yeah. What challenges does the culture play for the Concordias?
At some level, that's a nothing new question. So if we look at Romans chapter 12, St. Paul says, don't let the world press you into its mold. I mean, the first Christians, the early Christians, realized a lot of the same kind of tensions that we realize today. I mean, one of the realities is that the church is no longer the dominant force in the culture that it was 50 years ago, 75 years ago, 100 years ago. Some of the pressures that the institutions face is the reality that higher education is a highly regulated industry. It is. be that at the federal level, be that at the state level, be that at the accreditation level, even athletics. There's just all kinds of regulations, and you just think, ah. So part of that is how do we think about how we're going to do our mission and ministry in these places? You know, one option is kind of the Benedict model. Let's just retreat from the world. Let's circle the wagons. Let's stay there. Another is, let's say that we are at one time we're historically Lutheran or historically Christian, but that really has little to do with what we do today. Or the path that most of us are taking, I should say all of us are taking at the Concordia, is we want to be salt and light in God's world. And one of the realities we know from physics is where there is the greatest darkness, light shines the brightest. And so we're trying to be those shining lights in many ways of a dark world. I mean, one of the challenges that we face, and again, for perhaps your listeners, how can you help, is the challenges of the Equality Act that's being debated right now. I mean, those are serious, serious challenges to every congregation, to every Christian entity. And as citizens of this country, we need to be aware of that and informed and say, how can we lobby against that kind of legislation taking place?
And we need to act on those matters when they present ourselves in a way that helps protect the faith. And we have opportunities to make our voices heard, and we should absolutely look at doing that. So as you look ahead to your tenure of, your next 60, 70 board meetings at Concordia St. Paul. What are you most excited about?
Yeah, well, let's maybe step back from 60 or 70.
Let's go for the next 10. We'll start small. Let's talk about the next 10 board meetings. What are you most excited about?
The next
10
board meetings. So here, childhood secret. Can I tell a secret on the show?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's...
I mean, it won't be a secret anymore, but by all means.
Well, I was hoping maybe this would get edited and it would just be between you and me. No, it's not going to happen that way. We'll see. It's not a skeleton coming out, let me tell you. But as a kid, I grew up in rural Iowa. My dad was a parish pastor, and we would have these wonderful things each year, mission festivals. You are too young to remember those. You don't remember those. But
no, I don't.
Yeah, no, see, I knew you wouldn't. But we had these mission festivals, and it was the greatest thing because we would have these missionaries come from somewhere in the world, and we'd have a worship service in the morning, and we'd have a big picnic in the afternoon, and we'd play softball, and it was just the greatest thing. And then in the afternoon, we'd have a mission festival. And that was really great because then the missionary would bring all these different artifacts with him and share, this is how God is working in this corner of the country. So I was just mesmerized by that and said, when I grow up, I want to be a missionary. But I hated snakes. I couldn't even see garter snakes. And I said, I can't be a missionary because I can't go to some country where there are snakes. But here in St. Paul, I'm sure there are snakes. I just haven't seen any yet. But the amazing thing is God has brought all kinds of people from all corners of the world right here, right here. We have one of the largest Hmong populations in the world. So the Hmong people came here after the Vietnam War. They were refugees from Vietnam. So they're here. Folks from Somali are right across the interstate from us. We have students from Saudi Arabia. I mean, it is amazing because we're in this urban, multicultural environment, the opportunity we have to do mission work right here and now. So I think that's one of the things I'm most excited about. The second thing I'm most excited about are the people God is sending here. Reed Lessing, I think he's written half of the books for Concordia Publishing House.
He has two books coming out this year.
Yeah. And you know, he's a little myth that he can only write like five of the Concordia commentaries. He'd really like to do like 10, but he's limited to 5. So I'm glad you have him writing other books, but he's joined us.
He has one Concordia commentary and one book on, not a commentary, on Jeremiah coming out this year. So we'll be hearing a lot from Reed.
That's good. He's got a lot to say. And it's always good stuff, unlike me, which is more drivel than substance. But anyway, so Reed is so good. But Reed's coming here. And today we're announcing that Michael Tome, who's been the head of school at Concordia High School in Fort Wayne, Indiana, is joining our team this summer, and he's going to join us, helping us think about how we best serve in this diverse culture and world in which we live, serving students and faculty and staff and reaching to the church beyond us. So there's just all kinds of new people coming here that are amazing. And then the people that are here, oh, wow, this institution is on phenomenal financial footing. President Reese did a tremendous job during the 10 years of his tenure to make Concordia strong financially so that we're in a position really to withstand some of the economic and demographic challenges that are in front of us. So there's just so much to be excited about. I didn't even talk about the students. That could be a podcast in and of itself. They're phenomenal.
Tell me about your student body.
Oh, so our student body. So this year, Concordia St. Paul became the second largest private university in the great state of Minnesota. 5,567 students. And those students are kind of chunked into three categories. So our traditional residential undergraduate students, about a third. And then another third of our students are essentially adult online undergraduate students. And then another third are graduate, both master's and doctoral programs. So we have students from A to Z, really. And we have 70 undergraduate academic programs, 30 graduate programs. And as I said, they're online, they're face-to-face. It's just absolutely incredible.
No, that sounds like a great environment and a great campus.
It is a great environment. Hey, do you have any sons that might be prospective college students in a couple of years?
Well, there's a little bit of a bidding war going on for my oldest.
Really?
So
really?
You'll have to compete against your friend Kurth Brashear over at Nebraska, Concordia Chicago, you know. So you're going to have, yes, I do have a freshman in high school. So we're going to have a bidding war among the Concordias.
So I know we're talking generally about the Concordias, but I probably should get like a couple of plugs in for Concordia St. Paul. So here are
absolutely.
Two. Yeah. Okay.
Give me your best pitch for my son to come to Concordia St. Paul.
It's a four-letter word. Can I use four-letter words on this?
Depends on which one it is.
Like I could use pray, Lord. Could I use free?
Yes, sir.
F-R-E-E. Full tuition.
Yes. Full tuition. Those are excellent, excellent four-letter words when it comes to talking about college.
See, Mom, I knew you'd go for that. I know you're kind. But so yesterday I was able to call three students who are going to receive our 12 Disciples scholarship, full tuition scholarships for next year. And they're all in church work programs, two in teacher education and one in director of Christian education. So really excited about that. And then earlier this year, for our church work students, we announced a cap. So if students are going to any church work program, a cap of no more than $6,000 per year for the whole time they're at Concordia. So that's not going to go up incrementally. So that's what we're doing for church workers. It's fantastic. So for our general students, about 10 years ago, we did a tuition reset, and we reset our tuition by $10,000. So we are the lowest tuition priced institution in the great state, a private institution in the great state of Minnesota.
That's fantastic.
Okay, so you want to just like sign the deal now?
Well, I should probably consult my son. I could text him and tell him that we've decided where he's going to college.
Okay, that would be perfect.
See if he's game for it.
Yeah, or you could send me his number and I'll text him.
I will send you his number and you can text him and tell him, hey, we've settled your future.
I just want him at one of the Concordias, really. I think that's fantastic.
I won't be surprised if he ends up at one, but I don't think he hasn't quite reached the point in his thinking where he's narrowed down what he wants to do yet. So even though I think he's a little pastor in the making, but only the Lord knows where he's going to end up and what he's going to do.
Right.
Well, so we'll see.
You know, he has good genes.
He does. And he is a mini Opa. He's a mini Dale.
I've met him. He's a very impressive young man.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see.
How many board meetings do I have to wait until he would be ready to be like president of Concordia St. Paul?
I bet you asked him, he would be ready like next week.
Next week?
Yeah, I think he'd be ready to take it on right now.
Would he? Okay.
Yeah. as far as the credentials he would need.
Yeah, you can work on those. It's just letters. It's just a bunch of letters. He's smart. He can do that.
Smart kid.
He takes after his dad. You know, he's a smart kid.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Or his grandpa, generation skipping. You know, that sometimes happens.
He and his opa are like this. They're tight.
Yeah,
and they're very close, and it's very cute to watch them together when they go off to do whatever projects they work on. But we have digressed way off.
We have gotten way off. This is all going to get edited out. Thank you.
Yeah, probably not. We'll see. So what are some of the best ways that our listeners can support Concordia St. Paul or the other Concordias in their daily life?
Yeah. So I think, my hope and prayer is that the members of our church will be raving fans of our colleges, raving fans of our seminaries, raving fans of our Lutheran grade schools, high schools. That's awesome. How do you become a raving fan? Well, one, I think praying for them. And we talked before about visiting them, and now you can just www on any of the Concordias and you'll find them all. I think also encouraging students to attend a Concordia. We had an amazing statistic at Concordia, Nebraska. 70% of our students found out about Concordia or were encouraged to come to Concordia, Nebraska because a friend, alumnus, etc., encouraged them to do that. 70%.
That's fantastic.
Without those raving fans, we wouldn't be in existence. So that, and then I think the other opportunity, because the church no longer funds its institutions as it once did, to think about in my Christian stewardship, how can I help another generation of students as they prepare to serve the church, or as they, as we've talked about before, study on these campuses to learn the doctrine of salvation, to learn the doctrine of vocations, and to live out their Christian life in an amazing way. So individual people can have incredible impact on the lives of students right now or in the future.
Absolutely. And listeners, I would encourage you, if you're intrigued by this, check out our Concordias, visit Concordia St. Paul's website, learn a little bit more. And if you have high school students in your life who are looking for colleges, by all means, please point them to our Concordia University system as an option for them to explore, because great things are happening on our campuses. So you've got something big coming up at the end of this month on your campus. Tell us about that.
March 24th, CSP Day. And CSP Day is a day to celebrate the incredible blessings that God has provided to CSP and to encourage alumni, friends of the institution, to make a difference in students' lives. So our goal is on this one day to raise $100,000. And we've had a number of friends, alumni, step forward and say, well, if Elizabeth Pittman gives a gift to CSP on that day, I'm going to match her gift. But what a neat thing. So and my experience says Lutherans love matching gifts. What an opportunity. And I think it's not just Concordia St. Paul that does these Concordia celebration days. I know Concordia Chicago just finished its CUC Day, and Concordia Nebraska has one around the corner sometime. So Kurth Brashear, support Kurth and the great work Concordia Nebraska is doing. And it doesn't matter. But again, any of the Concordia. So it's just a fun day where we step it up a little bit in our promotion of Concordia St. Paul, our students, and our mission and ministry here.
I was just reminded of something when you were talking about CSP. at the last youth gathering, my middle son came with me and he collected a pair of CSP socks from the CSP booth. And he has, his initials are CSP.
No, Christian?
Connor.
Connor.
My son Connor's initials are CSP. And so he, whenever he wears them, he points out that they're his Connor socks.
That is fabulous. And Thank you for lifting that up. That's one of the premiums for people who give gifts. We're going to send them some Connor Pittman socks.
Absolutely. And you can, depending on who you're talking to, Concordia St. Paul, Connor S. Pittman.
Yeah, that's right.
It's all good.
You know, this kid's mom must be like a marketer or something.
Yeah, you know, they get pulled to all kinds of crazy places. So, well, I'm so glad that you've been able to join us today. I've really enjoyed the conversation. And I think you had a lot of very good things to say about the work that's happening on your campus and on our other campuses. So I appreciate your taking the time. Listeners, we'll put links to Concordia St. Paul and we'll share all that in the show notes so that you can click directly there and go and learn more. President Friedrich, thank you so much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. This has been so fun. You're just a rock star.
Oh, you're way too kind.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much. It's great to be with you today. Okay. God's blessings. Thanks.
Blessings. Listeners, we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Concordia Publishing House podcast. I pray that this time was valuable to your walk with Christ. We'd love to connect with listeners on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Concordia Pub. Visit cph.org for more resources to grow deeper in the gospel.